Okay, now let's all roll to one side. And then onto your hands and knees. And let's creep. I want you to creep on all fours. You creep, that's right, walking on all fours. Now as you walk, think of your spine lengthening from the lower end and your head moving to the wall ahead of you. The back half of the head moving to the wall ahead of you.
What?
The back half of the head moving to the wall ahead of you. The image we did yesterday of the smoothing of the collar and the back half of the head moving to the wall ahead of you. Almost as if the back half of the head moving to the wall ahead of you is pulling you forward. And there's a resistance. The tailbone is attached to the wall behind you. Okay. All right, now creep backwards. Creep backwards. Okay. Okay, now let's creep forward again. Now speed that up a little bit so you go a little faster. And go a little faster, and a little faster, and when you get to where you feel you've gone as fast as you want to go, change to standing and just walk on all twos. Now keep walking. Imagine you're still walking on all fours. Imagine you're still walking on all fours. Okay, anybody want to share your experience about walking on two legs after doing that? You get a sense of freedom in walking when you do that? All right, you think about it. Now, let's help the second group. Take your partner now. Start off with the tapping as they lie face down. And a tap. All right. We have a... okay. One of you... Okay, you both go down and I'll work on both of you. Okay, this is just tapping. Let's finish this group up with a tapping. Now, I'm going to rock our partners. Just a little rocking here. Rock. Okay. Now, next thing, we're going to watch the scapula that we took as barges yesterday morning float down to the heels. Do that about two or three times. Okay, now roll over onto your hands and knees. I'm sorry, not your hands and knees yet. Roll over onto your back. And just keep rolling. Don't collide with anybody. I want you to do about two or three rolls. Just roll, roll, roll. Yeah, roll, roll. And then roll in the other direction. Now onto all fours and creep. Creep on all fours. And image the tailbone lengthening and the head, half of the head sliding forward. And the cervical collar lengthening upward. Watch that. Now let's creep backwards. Creep back. Okay. Okay. Now once again, let's creep forward and speed that up a bit. And then from the speeding position, when you're going as fast as you wish, change to standing. Walk immediately. Let the walking... Now imagine that you're walking on all fours, even as you're on two. Just imagine you're walking on all fours. Okay. All right. Everybody get a go at that? Those people who have not done this yet, just lie on the floor for a minute, those who have not done this yet, and we'll give you an opportunity to do this. Okay, just lie on the floor if you've not done this. Anybody else? All right. Now, let's help these people out that have not done it. Turn face down, and tap them for just a few moments, face down. Just a little tapping. Okay, now rock them a little bit. A little gentle rocking, side to side. That's right, just a little nice rock. And that's right, rock the legs as well as the torso. Okay, now let's slide the shoulder blades down to the heels. the shoulder blades are like barges, so just give the tactile aid all the way down to the heels. That's the idea. All the way down. All the way down. Okay, now roll over onto your back. I just want you to roll and continue the roll. Keep rolling. Keep rolling. Just roll. You're like a barrel rolling. Everything rolls. And then roll in the opposite direction. Roll in the opposite direction. Roll. Roll. Okay. All right. Now on all fours and creep. Creep. Spine is lengthening. Half the head behind the quadrant coronal plane is sliding forward. Okay. A little longer with the head. That's right. Now creep backwards. And let's creep forward again now. Speed that up. And speed it up till you get to where you feel you're going as fast as you'd like. And then change to standing, walking immediately as you stand. And imagine that you're walking on all fours. Okay. Okay, let's have a seat. Creeping are very useful for helping you with your spinal lengthening. It's something that I would suggest you get in touch with, maybe doing as part of your warm-ups at some point during the day. Let's balance on the sit bones, and I want to review some of the processes and add some things to rib centering and shoulder centering that we did yesterday. So get on your sit bones, balanced evenly on the two. The bench is supporting your weight through the sit bones. And the spine is supporting your ribs. Let your spine, let your ribs rest in the spine. And the sternum, remember I talked about the support at the sternum. We use the puppeteer image. And another image, which I want to do again today. In other words, you're getting compression support for the ribs in the spine. They're resting in the spine, leaning against the spine. And here you have muscles coming up to the base of the head, which are giving you tensile support. So let's imagine that the sternum slides up between the ears to get a sense of that support. The sternum slides up between the ears. Put your fingers behind the jaw, front of the mastoid processes to indicate that that is happening. And And then imagine that the half of your head behind the cardinal coronal plane slides up. If you want to do some simple head flexing to initiate that, that would be fine. Just a small movement with the head. Now the ribs, which are getting tensile support from front here, the sides of the ribs slant down, and we want to let that happen. In other words, we don't want to pull the ribs up through the sides here, but rather rely more on the tensile support from here and the first rib. So the image I'm going to give you is that the ribs are hanging down like the branches of a tree that slant downward. So you're not pulling weight up into the ribs. The weight is being transmitted to the spine through the ribs. You don't want to pull it up into here. Now, that process of the sides of the ribs, it's almost as if your ribs were like loops coming around and looping here as they go up into the sternum. See, here we want to think up, that's fine. Here we want to let them hang. And that hanging process starts really with the armpits. Touch your armpits now and see if they are soft and deep. And if not, let them soften and deepen. Even if they are, let them get softer and deeper. Touching the armpits here. And instead of pulling the sides of your ribs up into your armpits, let the sides of your ribs fall out of the armpits. But this you have to visualize as having support, either from the puppeteer or letting it slide up to the atlas between the ears. That's, again, embellishing now this delicate balance of the shoulders here on the manubrium. I said that the shoulder girdle is balanced on the manubrium very much like a mobile, with the various tensile and compression forces. Okay, now let your shoulders rest on the manubrium and your scapulae. We worked on that earlier when we gave you tactile aid for the scapulae floating down. Just let your scapulae float over the ribs. You can think of any medium under them that you wish. It can be water, can be anything that you like. But just let them float over your ribs. And think of the clavicles resting in the sternoclavicular joint. The sternoclavicular joint. You might want to touch that joint just to get close to that. So the arms are hanging from there. Might want to even do a circle around one of them, under, up the back, over the top. Feels pretty good. Under, up the back, over the top. And if you're letting your arm hang down by your side, you could swing your arm in your lap. Just get going with that. And then go to the other side and touch that clavicle at the sternoclavicular. I think under it, up the back, over the top, and down the front. And swing your arm in your lap. think under, up the back, over the top and down the front, and swing the arm and the left. Okay. Now, I have something else we have to add to that. You've got a good basic procedure now for following the statement that I made yesterday that in the upright position, the shoulders are not involved in support of the torso, that is, supporting the weight of the torso. Rather, the shoulders themselves are getting support from the spine. Now, I want to work a little bit to make some more specific points on the shoulders. First, notice the curve here as you come out to the distal end of the clavicle. There's a beautiful little curve here. By thinking of that curve as being a curve instead of flattening it out, which is the concept we so many of us have, that can help ease your shoulder balance. Put your fingers in that curve for a moment and let it have a soft curve in here. See, that's going to curve back instead of straightening it out or thinking of it as four square. It's a soft curve. And then you have to keep going back to the idea that the shoulders are based here. They hang from this end. They have tensile support out here, but this is compression support. Once you've done one side, go to the other now and just let that curve soften. It's a beautiful curve. I really love to look at that structure. Very lovely. Okay, now, as you let that curve have its angle, and there's no specific amount of curvature there, just what you feel comfortable with, will you now think of the two shoulder tips, the acromion processes, as having more distance between them, as if they extend to the walls on each side? Just think that. You know, very interesting. I worked with a man who's been doing Alexander for over 50 years. He's a cantankerous Scotsman who comes to this country once in a while to give lessons. And his name is Patrick Campbell. Really knows what he's doing. So the Alexander people work quite a bit on widening the shoulders. So I asked him, when he talked about widening the shoulders, I said, what do you do to widen the shoulders? And he had a very wise answer, which is my philosophy exactly. He says you can't widen the shoulders. You can only not narrow them. I say that because as far as I'm concerned, holding your shoulders wide is just as bad as holding them narrow. Both are holding actions. One no better than the other. That's why I say that just think of the space between the shoulder tips increasing. Now, last night you had the sponges moving out, which should begin to give you that kinesthesia. So you want to take these things in steps. This is not an instant cure that you do it two or three times and it's done. It's a lifetime process that you have to keep re-experiencing, recreating. You have to constantly recreate all of this. Now, follow this. This is a little more difficult than what we just did. This joint here called the glenohumeral joint, where the head of the humerus rests into the cavity, the glenoid cavity. It articulates in here. And then right above it, you have the point where the clavicle articulates with the acromion process. And that's your acromioclavicular joint, as I told you. And remember I said that this tip, the shoulder tip, this acromion process, is like a roof over the glenohumeral joint. Think of that for just a moment on either side. Touch the roof. Think of the glenohumeral joint under the roof. It's sheltered. Okay, now, next step. See more space between the acromioclavicular joint and the glenohumeral joint. What we do is jam them together. Let this hang free and see more space between this joint and that joint. Let there be some space instead of jamming them together as one joint. They're not the same joint. Now that may take a little cultivation, but it's a powerful image to open your shoulders up. It's a powerful image to release holding in this end of the shoulder girdle. Now having done that, watch the space between the shoulder tips, that is the acromion processes, increase. In other words, you can think of them growing to the wall on either side of you. Okay, now you've got some more tools for using with the shoulders, and we're going to be talking about breathing here in just a minute. First of all, we have some business to attend to. Okay. I'm sorry, I don't understand. Well, it's attached to that part of the scapula where the glenoid cavity forms. That is part of the scapula, yes, as you come. But here, it's called the glenoid cavity. It's the same bone. But at this point, it's called the glenoid cavity. But yes, it's the scapula, right. Not attached to the clavicle at all, but to the scapular bone, right. Scapula attached to the clavicle at the acromion process, right.
Very good. There are
ligament. May I pardon?
There are ligament attachments, though.
Yeah, right. That's right. Okay, now, first point of business.
Asking the same question again that Catherine just asked. There are not ligaments to the clavicle.
There
from
are.
Humor.
Yes.
Okay,
right.
Muscular.
And muscular, right. Okay. Now, we have a list of the class which Carol wants to make available for everybody, because different people want to have contact maybe later with people who are in their class. What we want to do this morning is to pass this around, this list, and if any corrections need to be made, to make the correction not on the list, because this is the master list from which we're going to work and make changes on that, but rather on this blank sheet of paper that I'm going to pass around with it. Okay? If there are any corrections, if your name as it's an address as appears on here is correct, then you do not have to make any correction. There's nothing for you to do. If you need to make a correction, make it on the white blank piece of paper. And the other thing is, with some of you, there is no phone number. If you wish a phone number to be added to your address, then include that, or if there's any error in the phone number that's on there. That's up to you. If you don't want your phone number put on there, that's all right too. But when you go over the list, I'm going to pass it around, if there is no phone number and you want a phone number to be put on, then put your name and the phone number and we'll add it to what's on there. Again, basically, any correction that needs to be made, put it on the blank sheet of paper. I'll pass that around while we are finishing off some other business. Okay, now let me just take the roll, and then Danny has some information for you. Okay. Kathy Anderson, I don't see. Okay. Nan is here. Ruth is here. Louisa is here. I think Lovia here. Kathy Dana, Catherine Duncan, Sabina Einfeld. Okay. Sarah Freeman. All right. Robert Funk is here. Okay. Victoria Goodrich. Victoria not here. Ruth Griffin. No. Sarah Hart. Liviana Ingravalo. Liviana, no. Ulrika Kyle. Ulrika. Not here. Aviva Keller. Aviva. Okay, Aviva. Lee Lightfoot. And Danny is here. Isha Mayam is here. And Jane Seabrook. Okay. Rhea Irvine. Soto. Teresa. Kate Jones is here, I think. Yeah, Kate. Gotcha. Okay. Deborah Beer, not here. Kristen Belair. Kristen here? Okay, Kristen. Madeline here? Yeah, I thought you were Madeline. Okay, Dolet. Tamar is here. Sacho? No. Janice Jenkins? Marianne? Inga Martin? No. Jamie Miller is here. Sally? No. Gita Plate? No. Claire Sherman? Okay, Charles. Aliza? Okay. Did anybody here that I did not get? All right. Danny, you want to make your announcement? And you let your weight rest on the femur heads. And you can let the spine lengthen down to your heels, because your weight is resting on your femur heads, not in your coccyx. And then let's cycle the arms above the head, thinking up the front and down the back. Now, when you do the blowing through the straw, you're going to let the barges, the shoulder blades as barges, lengthen down to your heels. Blow. And then let's slide the scapula up over the ribs. And then drop. And then again, slide the scapula up over the ribs. And then drop. Soft elbows. Okay, have a seat. I just wanted to get you out of the sitting position for a moment. Okay, breathing. What is the body trying to do when it breathes? Basic question. And the answer is that the body is trying to get more air into itself so that the oxygen can be processed from the air and delivered to the cells of the body for nutrition. And the way that it does that, it expands its container, which is the rib cage, in all directions. That is, it expands side to side, front to back, and up and down. That's one way. Now, the other way that it increases its capacity for air is the thoracic diaphragm within the rib cage here contracts on inhalation. That process, that part of breathing we call inhalation. And when it contracts, it creates more space within the container in addition to the expansion which the ribs have undergone to create more space. So there are then these two factors involved in the breath. The expansion part and the contraction of the diaphragm take place on what we call inhalation. So let's look at this again now. The thoracic diaphragm, which we referred to, is a muscle, a very fibrous muscle, which attaches to the insides there, the last six ribs, to the xiphoid process and slants downward to the 12th thoracic vertebra. Ruth, could you get me that pad? It's in the office. I'm sorry. I forgot that. I appreciate it. Okay. Slants downward, attaching to the 12th thoracic vertebra. In the center, not exactly in the center, but it's called the central tendon, there is a tendon running through the diaphragm, and the contractile fibers of the diaphragm which surround that tendon all converge into the central tendon of the diaphragm. Now, on the front of the spine here, along the lumbar vertebrae, there are more tendons. They're called the crura of the diaphragm. I'll write that down. Thank you, Ruth. One is a cruce. One, two. And those serve to anchor, to help anchor the diaphragm so that when it contracts, it moves down instead of upward. Muscles don't have any ability to contract in any particular direction. They can only contract along their contractile fibers. And movement will take place in the path of least resistance. So again, now the diaphragm is going to move down when it contracts because its attachment down here is very firm with the crurum. The left crus attaches to the first four lumbar, the first two. And the right attaches to the first four. Todd gives a good description of the thoracic diaphragm. It is dome-shaped, but it's uneven. It looks like a lopsided mushroom, the dome being higher on the right than it is on the left. And the reason for that is that the liver, which is a fairly large organ, is on under the right side of the diaphragm. Under the left side is the stomach, which is smaller. So the liver, in effect, is pushing the diaphragm up on the right, and it's higher there. The central tendon is continuous from the top with the pericardium of the heart. The heart's above the diaphragm, and the pericardium is a membrane-like covering or case in which the heart is contained. And that forms really into the central tendon of the diaphragm. So when the diaphragm contracts and the central tendon moves down with the diaphragm, the heart gets a little massage. This is one of the reasons why deep breathing is so important and so valuable. Some anthropologists feel that the diaphragm evolved in terms of the evolvement of the species at some point in some species as an organ of circulation rather than respiration. The diaphragm now is the major organ in breathing, but it possibly evolved as an organ of circulation at some point. It still serves that function because as it contracts and moves downward, it pushes the viscera down and out, and then the tug on the heart, which is promoting circulation, exciting the cardiovascular system, giving some stimulation to that. That's the inspiratory phase of breath. The rib cage also, as it expands on inhalation, the sternum is lifted slightly up and out. Now on exhalation, the diaphragm relaxes and the muscles that have expanded the ribs and raised the rib cage relax. And the rib cage will then narrow back to its normal proportions for exhalation and drop a bit. And the diaphragm will then rise back up again. It is elastic, so the elasticity of it causes it to come back up once the contraction is released. That excursion of the diaphragm, we should be clear about, as an image, we can imagine it to be whatever you like. I mean, as deep as you wish. But the actual movement of the diaphragm is only about a half inch. So it's not a huge movement that you might be looking for something that really isn't there. Of course, when you're more active, it's going to descend more than a half inch, but a half inch is about average. Now, Basmajian, the Canadian kinesiologist, adds two more phases to breath. I've described inhalation and exhalation. And he describes two more, which he calls the static phases of breath. That is the pause after exhalation and after inhalation. And I'm very glad that he has brought this out, because those pauses are very valuable in breath. They enable the tissue moments of rest so that the tissue can rejuvenate itself. You know, in all of the autonomic processes, the automatic or autonomic processes of the human functioning, there's a work phase and a rest phase. And the rest phase is always a little longer than the work phase, which enables the organism to function continuously without having to shut down. It's particularly true of the heart, where the rest phase of the heart is just a wee bit shorter than the work phase. See, because if you had to shut the system down, you couldn't continue to live. You can't stop your heart to get a rest. So the heart's resting all day long. And the same thing should be true of breathing. So those little pauses are important. Now, what we're going to be practicing today is some more of the forced exhalation. We've been blowing through the imaginary straw, and we're going to do a little more of that in a few minutes. First of all, let me see if I've covered all that I need to cover. All right. Taken care of. Okay, this is the way you will be presented to the world. Now, let's see. Here's the image we're going to use for the inspiratory.